Okay, we're going to call the Senate Education Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, February 25th. Time is a little bit after 8. In attendance today is Vice Chair Davis, Senator Stevens, Senator French, and myself, Senator Meyer. Co-Chair Thomas will not be here today. The Finance Committee meeting. Finance Committee is meeting at this time today, so he is up there. Today we're just going to continue our discussion on Senate Bill 8. By the way, I want to welcome back Senator Thomas, Trustee Aide Murray, who just lost some appendix, I think. Good. Well, welcome back. Glad you're here. Is there anything to come before the committee before we get started on our discussion on Senate Bill 8? Okay, seeing and hearing none. Senate Bill 8 was Senator Davis's bill relating to student questionnaires and surveys. We had an overview of the bill from Senator Davis's aide, Mr. Obermeyer, and I think today we were going to take up public testimony. Was there any additional comments that you wanted to make, Senator Davis or Mr. Obermeyer?
I was not able to be here Monday when the bill was heard. Mm-hmm. Of course, this bill has been around for quite a while, and I'm pleased that we are taking it up at this point. It's an important piece of legislation, I do believe, because there are many agencies that depend upon the information that is gotten from the survey. It's not a perfect survey, and there might be some things that people might not think are worded correctly and need to be corrected, but we have nothing to do with that. CDC would take care of that, and any changes that we want to recommend be made, we would get that to them. But what we can do is make it more accessible for the students to take the test rather than the Department of Education puts money into it to help get the word out. The individual districts put money in to help get the word out. And still, we don't always reach the number of participants that we want to get. If the change is made, I do believe that it would help. And you said that was an overview, and I just want to hear what the testimony might be and answer any questions that you might have. But at this point, I have no other remarks.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Senator Davis. Mr. Obermeyer, do you mind coming up for just a minute?
On the record, I'm Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis.
I did just have one additional question. Did I see or hear or read somewhere that we're required to have a 60% participation in order?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, it's my understanding that it is a 60% participation rate of the entire state participation in order to qualify for being included in the national statistics so that our state could be compared to the other states on the various levels of participation in all of the various types of activities, risk behaviors that are analyzed. And you might have noted that even with a recent handout, which is only partial, there are enormous amounts of calculations that are done trying to see the risk behaviors that children are and youth are engaging in, and so it's very important that we meet that level. The school district, and I think there's a gentleman online from Anchorage School District that has been doing this for about 15 years. It's my understanding that they take a certain number of schools in a state each biennial survey. And it's that group from which they aggregate all of the participation.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Obermeyer. Any questions? Senator Stevens.
Sure. I just brought the issue of are there other states that do not participate, Tom? How many states? Do we have any figures on that?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I'm not aware of any other states that don't participate. There may be others that fail to make the participation. I have no idea, but this has been a significant problem for Alaska for some time.
Senator French?
Thank you. Actually, Senator Stevens' question was along the same lines of mine. What level of participation do we see across the nation? Where do we fall on that level? And final question, so it's like a three-parter. Is there evidence that by going from sort of a passive to an active form of survey distribution that will get a higher rate of return? I mean, I think it's intuitive. It's common sense we'll get a higher rate, but if other states do in law what we're proposing to do, that'd be something that we could look to for encouragement. Thank you.
Could I speak to that, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Davis, sure.
I don't have a problem with him also giving his answer, but the one answer you need to know that we know that the participation can increase if we change it because this is what we had prior to what we have now. And ever since we switched, it's been going low. You know, every year is not the same participation. They only do the test every 2 years. All the states, all the districts throughout the United States participate in it. We can't give you all their levels. But we do know that we've been where we want to go prior to what we have now. And the participation rate was higher with less money being put into it.
And just to follow up, either for this bill sponsor or Mr. Obermeyer, what year was that we shifted from passive to active, if those are the two right terms?
I can't give you the date.
Senator French, it's my understanding that it was about 1999 that we shifted it somewhere in my notes here, and I could probably dig it out.
Yeah, that's okay. You're getting these in the back of the room, so that's helpful. The crowd agrees with you. Thank you.
Okay, and if I may, and what are the consequences, again, of not doing the survey or not getting the 60%?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, the consequences are significant. The school districts will lack the information they need to know how to deal with certain behaviors that are going on that we're aware of, but we just don't have any statistics on it. The agencies that help them, and there are many agencies, whether it's the Heart Association or the Diabetes Association, the Cancer Association, all of these activities, the tobacco groups, all of these people are involved in watching what goes on with the youth, and they gather this information. They can help best answer the question and allocate their resources toward correcting these risk behaviors. And of course, some of this also involves their asking for and getting grants to help continue with their operations as well.
Okay, and if I can just follow up on that, do these agencies help as far as getting the kids and parents educated in the importance of doing these surveys?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I'm not aware that what type of support they give, but they put out information to the public and to the parents and schools when they gather this information as to what's going on. So the results and their analyses and their printouts are very useful. We just received one last night from the Cancer Society, and you may have it in your hearing package this morning, about their comments in this area.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And I guess one of the arguments I hear from the school district is that it costs them a lot of time and money trying to get these parents to give their permission to do the survey. And what you're saying is that a lot of agencies benefit from this information. And my question is that, you know, couldn't the agencies help the school district get the parents to
Mr. Chairman, we don't have that information. As far as I know, they don't. Most of the agencies that we're talking about are struggling anyway. They don't have money. They're nonprofits, and they're looking for grants, and they are assistance to our students by providing information to us. And to say that all schools don't participate at a high rate, some do. Mm-hmm. Some school districts have no problem getting it. Other school districts do. But I just want to put this on an even playing field. So it's not so much that we want to ask the nonprofits to donate money to help the survey when we can make the change right here in statute and let it be there for a period of time.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It's just that in the past, as this issue has come up, there's been a lot of resistance in forcing the parents to participate. So voluntary would be much better than forcing.
This bill does not force parents to participate, and it does not even force the children to take the test of the survey. They can even on the day of the survey can refuse to take it. Nobody's threatened and have to take this test.
Okay.
There are means to come out of it.
Yeah, I think it requires the parent, though, to opt out, whereas right now they don't. Am I correct?
I understand, but we're still not forcing them. That's their option to do that. But the child can also opt out of it himself, don't have to take the test, the survey.
Through the chair, this particular draft has been amended to, require that if the parents want to require that their child not take it, they would reply in writing. We give them extensive notice in the first two pages of the draft that explain the entire process and the fact they can review the survey before making a decision and contact the school and give them school contacts. But when it comes to the day of the survey, after all the notices have been given out in spring, within 2 weeks, because they usually sign up for this type of thing in fall, once it's administered, the students are told that they don't have to take the survey and that if they find particular questions objectionable, that they do not have to answer those questions. So that the rest of those results would all be valid for all the various uses.
Okay. Well, good. I think that helps.
And the one last thing, if I could, Senator Meyer, the one thing that I think is significant about this is that these results that come through have been used for years. They have been most useful, I think, in the health and social service area. That we have no other means of getting this type of information. So I just
that helps significantly. So I think. And I see it right here in the bill. Apologize for not getting to that part. So even though the parent has not opted out, the student can still opt out at any time.
At any time, right up through. Yes.
Okay. All right. Very good. Any other questions? Okay. I do think we have some folks online to testify, and we have some folks here as well. Let's go ahead and go offline here to Michael Kursky. Kursky with the Anchorage School District?
Yes.
Yep. If you would put your name.
Michael Kursky?
Put your name on the record, please, and your affiliation.
Sure. Good morning, Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to offer this information. My name is Michael Kursky. I'm the supervisor for Safe and Drug-Free Schools for the Anchorage School District. And in that position, I have coordinated the administration of the YRBS for the last 15 years, every other year that we've offered it. I might note, because of the size of the Anchorage School District relative to the other districts in the state, if the Anchorage School District doesn't offer the YRBS and successfully complete the YRBS, the rest of the state doesn't get a valid sample. So it's been incumbent on us as a district to find an effective way to make sure that we come through with our own results, so that at least the state has a chance on getting results statewide. There's really three different aspects of the survey that could be talked about. There could talk about the survey instrument itself. We could talk about the process of gathering permission forms, and then we could talk about the usefulness of the data. This morning, I'd like to just focus on the process of gathering permission forms because I think that's the most pertinent at this point. I'd be glad to talk at another point about the instrument itself or the usefulness of the data, both of which are equally important and could talk equally long about each of those. But just for the sake of discussion, I'd like to just talk about the process that we use to gather data and permission forms so that you have that, which seems to be most relevant to the bill at hand. There was a question earlier about other states. From my understanding is there's only two or three other states that require active parent consent for the YRBS. I'm not sure what those states are, but my understanding is there's only two or three others. Of those states, Alaska is the only one that has successfully been able to complete the YRBS. In other words, we're the only ones been able to find a way to deal with the active parent consent law and still get a valid YRBS sample. And a lot of that is due to the process I'm going to describe for you here now. So, as you know, the YRBS is given out every 2 years. in the fall of the year that it's going to be administered. We give out parent permission forms at registration to high school students' parents. So the parents at time of registration in the fall have a chance to say yes or no to whether their students can take the YRBS or not. Then in the usually around December, we get a list, we get a request from the state, the Department of Epidemiology, notifying us that they want to do the YRBS, and so then we submit to them a list of all of our second period classes, all the classes, the teachers, and the names of the classes that are offered during second period, which is when the survey is administered. We submit that list to them. They take that list and select randomly, usually about four or five classrooms per school, per general comprehensive high school, and usually ends up around 1,200 students total, which is statistically a representative sample of our students. We have about 13,000 high school students. It may seem hard to understand that 1,200 students can be a representative sample of 13,000, but statistically, they say that that is true. So we're really dealing with about 1,200 students when it comes down to how many surveys are given out and how many parent permission forms we have to deal with. But we've been assured that that's a representative sample. If we can get those done, that will tell us exactly what's happening with the 13,000 students that we have. So once we get the list of the classrooms that have been selected, we print out a list of all the students in those classrooms, and at that point then we go down through our database, our student database, and figure out which of those students' parents have said yes to surveys, which of those students' parents have said no to surveys, and which of those parents have said nothing to surveys. They won't have any yes or no from them. According to the state law, parents who have said yes, we need to send them a letter saying, dear parent, you've said yes to the survey so far. We're going to be giving out the survey within the next, couple weeks. You have a chance to rescind your permission. If you want to do so, please send back the self-addressed stamped envelope and we will take your permission away. To the parents who have said no to surveys, we don't contact them at all. We just leave them alone. And to the parents who have not said yes or no, that becomes our real target audience, essentially, because those are the parents that we can still ask and get a yes or no from them. We send a letter home to them asking them for permission, saying you haven't indicated what you want. Can we get your permission to give permission to the survey? And send home information about the survey and what it's for and what it's used for. And we include a self-addressed stamped envelope for them to return back a written permission for them, yes or no. All we want to do is get that permission slip back, either yes or no, doesn't matter. We just want something back from them. This year we had about half of the students whose parents had not said yes or no either way. So we had about 600 forms that had to go out to parents and trying to get something back from them. Roughly 10% of those parents send something back in the mail. We get a relatively low response rate when we request something from parents in the mail. It's just our experience is that there's just too many pieces of paper coming home from school and from other places. A lot of that just gets lost for parents. So once we get back in the mail the 10% or so that we get from our first mailing, then we hand the list over to a coordinator at each of the high schools who we've hired. They do this in addition to their teaching job or their counseling job. And they work with the individual teachers of the selected classrooms and the students in those classrooms. The arrangement is that any class, any of those four or five or six classes that were selected from each of the high schools, if any of those classrooms get 100% of their parent permission forms returned in, either yes or no, it doesn't matter what the parents say, we just want the parent permission form turned in. If they get that turned in, then that class will get a pizza party at a date that they can set up on their own. That includes 2 pieces of pizza and a soda per student. And we have found that that's been an incredible incentive for students to go home and ask their parents, can I get that permission form from you? And it really does work. It's been really probably the one single thing that we've found that has motivated students to hound, if you will, their parents to make sure the form comes back. Again, I want to stress that it doesn't matter what the form says. We just want a yes or a no. We just want the form back. What we have found is that if the form comes back, about 80% of the forms, almost always, 80% of the forms say yes. Most parents don't have a problem with the survey. Only about 20% of them say no. It's just they just don't get the form back to us. And so if we incentivize the system so that the form gets turned back in, if we get 100% of the forms back, almost always we get the majority of the forms saying yes, which is what we need in order to do the survey. Essentially then, once we get, you know, the forms turned in, usually almost always we have enough forms to say yes to the survey, and then we can go ahead and set up a date. It's usually like this week. This year it was the third week of February, the second week of February, and they administer the survey to the students who have said yes, whose parents have said yes, and then they go ahead and schedule the pizza parties. We've also found that I've incentivized the coordinators at the schools that we hire to coordinate all this. If they get 100% of their forms back from their school, they get a $100 bonus. And again, that's helped. I've had coordinators. There was one or two parents who hadn't turned something in, and they've actually gone home, you know, gone to the parents' home and knocked on the door and said, "We just need that form from you. Can we have it back?" And it's just the whole system of trying to get the paper, piece of paper back from the parents that we found needs to happen. And again, I don't really worry about getting the permission, you know, if we're going to have enough permission saying yes or no, because, like I say, almost always we get about 80% of them saying yes when we get all the permission forms back. So essentially, you know, we've set up an elaborate infrastructure to get pieces of paper back, 600 to 1,200 pieces of paper back every 2 years, and this year costs us about $30,000 between, you know, the printing costs and the mailing costs and paying the different coordinators and the pizza parties and all the things that go into that system to get the pieces of paper back. It's a very elaborate, fairly expensive system to move pieces of paper back and forth between schools and home in order to get the survey done, is what it comes down to. Let's see what else I can say about this. So that's, obviously if we had passive consent, then we wouldn't have this whole infrastructure of getting the pieces of paper back and forth, and it would be much, much cheaper to do the survey. I think that's about as best I can describe it at this point. I'd be glad to take any questions that you have.
Very good. That's been very helpful, Michael. Appreciate that explanation. Hopefully at the pizza and soda party, you're serving diet soda.
Right, or juices. We've had to go to juices recently because of the health law.
Senator Stevens.
Chairman, Michael, just wondering, do you ever use or have you used electronic? It seems like so many folks use email these days. Is that have you considered that? And it seemed to be less expensive.
Well, I mean, I think it's still just a matter of emails. We probably get more email than we do pieces of paper now, and so we usually have to have something back. We haven't gone to the electronic way because we haven't got a legal ruling on it whether that counts legally or not. We just haven't crossed that bridge yet, if you will. I think it was in 2001 when we first had to deal with this after passing the law. A whole bunch of us would spend evenings calling home to parents and saying, you know, explaining this to them, saying, you know, will you give us parent permission form? They said yes. We said, fine, we'll put a slip in the mail to you. Can you return that to us, a self-addressed stamp? They said yes, we'll return it to you. And then they just didn't come back. So even calling home and asking them for the form, telling them it was coming, and then sending it home, it still didn't come back. We found we just got to have students going home and dogging their parents and saying, look, Mom, Dad, we got to have this form back. And that's been the best so far.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Thank you. And so your experience would appear to show that if everyone were contacted, it would probably turn out 80% would say yes, 20% would say no. I assume that is what you've said. And can you tell us, in your experience, what are the reasons people say no? What are the reasons that 20% says no?
I really don't know. I mean, I have not. I think there's people concerned. My biggest, I think probably I've heard the most is people are concerned that they don't want their kids thinking about this material. They're afraid that if they get asked about suicide or they ask about drugs or alcohol, that somehow that will turn them on to wanting to do that behavior, which is, you know, pretty, it just doesn't happen. But there seems to be kind of this, an awareness that, or some fear that, you know, if you ask my kid about suicide, that somehow that's going to make them think about committing suicide. That's been my, that's the number one thing I've heard the most, I guess.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Stevens.
Yes, thank you.
Anything else? See none. Appreciate you joining us today, Michael.
Sure. Any other way I can help, I'd be glad to.
Well, yeah, maybe if you can, maybe stay online in case there are some additional questions that come up as we continue on here.
Absolutely. Sure.
Okay, let's go back to Juneau and Carl Rose. Morning, Carl.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. Thank you for the opportunity to have a chance to have this discussion. If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask for a little bit of latitude to give you an example of how data is used. I think it's important. We've plowed a lot of ground on the importance of the data and how difficult it is to get that data with the YBRS. But I'd like to share with you some of the things that I think are critically important. AASB is resolved in support of Senate Bill 8, and we thank Senator Davis and the committee for bringing the bill forward. I want to share with you a document that you probably have in front of you. It's a progress report on a vision becoming a reality. It's the ICE, the Alaska Initiative for Community Engagement. On page one, we kind of describe, I wanted to show you page one because that's my grandson in that picture right there. So, I mean, you know. I think the important thing for us to see is to look beyond the problems that face young people and find out what makes young people resilient and successful. How do we help them to be successful? The answer to that is that young people need, what they need most is supportive relationships with adults. It's a shared responsibility, and it creates healthy communities and healthy youth. I just would share with you, when was the last time you walked past a youth and maybe engaged them in conversation? In everyday life, we don't do that much. Adults are uncomfortable talking to youth. Youth are uncomfortable talking to adults simply because we don't have relationships. We had a vision to turn a vision into reality, and the issue has to be, in order to do this, you have to know where you are and where you're going. And the way that you know that is with data. By using the initiative of community engagement as an example, you can see the progress that we've made by using data to identify strengths and to measure results. On page three of the document, I'll just briefly point out, on the sidebar, we have what we refer to as 40 developmental assets. These are behavioral development assets that have been identified by the Search Institute in Minnesota. Many of our communities, many of our families possess a number of these. Unfortunately, the data has shown us that with regard to these developmental assets that encourage positive decision-making on behalf of youth, that the average student has about 18 of the 40 assets readily available. So I think it's fair to say to all of you that when we go into a community and work in either with a community or with a school, we often start by measuring the characteristics of the number of students and how many assets that they possess. They're correlated to academic and social and civic success, and they also reduce risk behaviors, drugs, alcohol, early sex, and suicide. At this point, I would just like to share with you, this is a strength-based effort. We do not focus on the deficits. We focus on healthy behavior and good decisions of youth. And I will give you an example of that shortly. We rely on many kinds of data to motivate, measure progress, and evaluate outcomes. And I'll quickly point to page 8. How we measure change in the community, organizations, and schools. At the top of the page and at the bottom of the page, we see increasing achievement through positive school improvement. I think what's important here is that the evaluation results, when we talk about looking at schools, school climate and connectedness survey data show increasingly over time this valuable data for schools, because positive climates are associated with higher proficiency rates in reading, writing, math, and fewer risk behaviors. I would share with you that policymakers like this body expect results and want research-based programs, initiatives that hold us accountable for measuring change, as you should. It takes data. And that's what the discussion is about today. This is an example of how you can move a vision to reality. And I think what's critically important, we've plowed a lot of ground here in terms of how do we get this data? Why should we have this data? You know, what, who are we offending by doing it? Who are we trying to protect? I would suggest to you that the Association of Alaska School Boards, the very first portion of our mission statement is to advocate for children and youth. We're very concerned that we look at the strengths that our kids possess and not necessarily focus on the deficits. But in order to do that, we have to know what they're thinking. You have a document that's in your packet that is placed before you, a very simple document. This was developed by two students, one from Eagle River, Ariel Zalkowski, and a graduate, Tanner Lyons, who took the YBRS study and kind of turned it around into a positive statement to say, and I just will say briefly, in terms of healthy activities, 58% of us have participated in sports. 71% have abstained from sex in the last 3 months. 84% have a healthy weight, and 68% have had a salad in the last week. But if you go through this and you take a look, issues, 94% of us don't bring weapons to school. 72% of us don't fight. 89% of us are tobacco-free. 81% of us don't use marijuana. The point is, it's not what kids do, it's what they don't do. I mean, we have a number of good kids, so I would share with you this. The very best and the very worst of society are in our schools. And we have a tremendous amount of success with some, and we struggle mightily with others. It's the struggle that causes us to want to get information that helps us identify what some of the risk behaviors are and what some of the remedies might be in terms of strength-based initiatives to help young people see that there are other options available to them. And I think if you look at this survey, you're going to find that over a 10-year period, the measurements of YBRS in the last two that we've had, and I have to go back to maybe 2004, possibly Michael can correct me, We actually saw, we didn't just arrest risk behaviors in the state, which is huge to arrest it. We actually reversed some of those risk behaviors by a very small amount, but we reversed some of the risk behaviors. These are the kind of things that we're talking about as a result of data, having the data and knowing where we're going. So with that, I'm going to hold my comments. I'm sorry for not testifying more specifically on the bill, but I think what I wanted to do was give you an example of how data is used and what a positive impact it can have. And besides, my grandson's on the committee. So I'll try to answer any questions you might have if you have any.
Very good. That's a very good presentation. Thank you, Carl. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I always appreciate hearing Carl, and I always agree with him when he's finished. And it takes me a while to figure out whether I really agree with him or not. But I just took a survey yesterday at the health fair, and one of the questions was, do you always wear your seatbelt? And I checked that box, always wear a seatbelt. I don't do that. I don't always wear a seatbelt, I got to tell you. I mean, just between you and me, not nobody else.
Webcams, Mr.
This morning, driving down here, I put my seatbelt on because I was thinking, wow, I did check that box, didn't I? So maybe I should start adapting my behavior to what I should be doing. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is that sometimes, a survey like this might just improve behavior, making you realize that you're not doing what you want to do or not doing what you should do. Maybe I check the box on eating salad, but I don't even know if I had a salad yesterday, you know. But it does sort of push you towards the right behavior. Is there anything to that at all? And forget that I told you I didn't wear a seatbelt.
Your secret's good with me. Through the chair, yes, there is a correlation. We have a survey that we do that we do with kids. When we ask the things that they value and the things that they think are important and the kinds of behaviors that are that their parents expect from them, and then we turn around and we survey parents. Well, you know what's funny? Parents think they do all these things, but students see that there is a discrepancy in terms of the interpretation of what kids see adults doing and what adults think they're doing. And so I think one of the things that's important is, you know, to much of what you would suggest, our conversation that we have with this whole idea of surveying is not that we want to encourage people to do risky behaviors. And I have to admit that some of the things in the YRBS does raise that specter. But the important thing is, what do we know about our youth? What are our youth doing? Where are they spending their time? And what kind of alternatives can we prepare? Not necessarily programs, but initiatives that help them see better options. So I don't know if that answers your question, but from our point of view, most of our kids appreciate the fact that you treat them like adults, you ask them serious questions, and you offer them real options. They accept that more than being told what they can't do. They'd like to be encouraged in terms of what they can do to improve. That's been our experience.
And maybe to follow up on that, Michael, who was speaking earlier, said that one of the reasons that 20% of folks don't want their children to do these surveys is because they think if you ask a child about suicide, it may plant that in his mind and lead to a suicide. How do you – I think what you've said is just an absolute counter to that, that bringing these issues up, sex, drugs, alcohol, suicide, kids talk about that in any event, whether we have it on a form or not.
Through the chair, I think that these issues are pervasive throughout our society, whether you're watching TV or reading magazines or whatever you see. I think the issue really has to be not to focus on the deficit behavior, but to take a look at what the strength-based opportunities are for kids. And by virtue of the document that these two youth put together with regard to a positive spin on the YBRS, this is what you're trying to create, are people who can see, you know, the better angels rather than focusing on the deficits.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks. Mr. Burroughs? Okay, I had to see one other person here in Juneau, and then we'll go back on off-net. Bruce Johnson. Thank you, Tom. Morning.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Bruce Johnson with the Alaska Council of School Administrators. It's my pleasure to be here this morning. My office was located alongside of Carl's for 9 years, so I've been through this and clearly appreciate his comments and his insights in terms of our need to have the ability to find out what's going on in the lives of kids in a variety of ways, and this is one way that we think we can secure good data. Obviously, data is important as school districts attempt to make decisions about program, about counseling, about how you're going to interact with kids, all of those sorts of things. This plays a huge role. And the more data we have, the better off I think we generally are. We're not offering out of ignorance. We may go down a rabbit trail occasionally, but we go down more rabbit trails without data. And, you know, we experiment with various things. So this is important. I represent the superintendents, the principals, and the business officials. They all would like to see the capacity to survey students in a way that's easy, but still protects the rights of parents. And I think that Senator Davis has done a nice job of crafting a bill here that would move us in that direction, assuring parent rights when they have concerns that they can opt out, they can look at the survey. All of those things are in place. So I very much offer our support that this bill be moved forward. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Senator Stevens.
We heard from Michael in Anchorage that he estimated the cost, I think, must be to the Anchorage School District of some $30,000. Since you represent all districts, principals and superintendents, what would you estimate the statewide cost might be of the old system of doing things?
I don't have that specific figure, so it would be speculative on my part to give you a number. But I think it's gotten to the point in some districts that they just don't do much with it. Because it is so challenging and costly, both in terms of finance but also energy, and particularly in our smaller school districts, where if you don't get a robust sample and those sorts of things, it's just not worth doing. So I think we're into that. One of the surveys that the School Board Association developed, the Climate and Connectedness Survey, we worked very closely with attorneys there to be sure that it met the spirit of the old law so that we did not have to get the positive parental consent, but rather they still had an opt-out provision. But there was a lot of cost involved in doing that, and the data probably is not nearly as robust if we could do it another way. So, sorry, I can't answer that question directly.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we do have a couple people here in Juneau, but I think they're for questions. Patty? Patty Owen? Yeah.
I'm here for questions.
Okay.
If anybody has any.
Okay.
That's the YRBS coordinator.
Okay, very good. And then I believe Dr. Harbord?
Yes.
Sorry, I messed that up. Is here as well. Is there anybody else here in Juneau who wanted to testify? If not, we'll go online. Did you want to testify, ma'am? I'm looking at you. No.
Sure, I didn't sign up. Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Just okay. Put your name on the record. If I mean, you don't have to testify.
Oh,
just
no,
look like you wanted to.
I have something to say.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Meyer. My name is Wendy Hamilton, and I've been involved in social and health issues here as a program manager for the tobacco program. You worked with youth and a chemical dependency counselor, and I'm here just as a citizen. I just have two things to say, and one is referencing the cost. It is tremendous cost, not just dollars, as Michael talked about, the $30,000 in the Anchorage School District, but manpower. The manpower that it takes to get enough survey data back is tremendous. In some years, we fail even after expending all that manpower and dollars. And that's just to reach 60% to make it significant, and as Mr. Johnson was saying, if we could get even higher than that, then we have even better numbers to know what to focus on. If we get up to 80%. The other thing is the CDC did a research a few years ago. They actually called a lot of the parents in different states who did not return a form for whatever reason, And what they found out was the biggest reason was they just lost it, didn't care, didn't see it. You know, you come home from work, you have two parents working, two or three kids, you come home, there's a pile of mail, it gets lost. So it really is just lack of attention is why people don't respond. And it seems to me that the parents who really don't want their children to take it are going to respond because they feel strongly about it, whereas all the rest of it just falls by the wayside. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And I certainly agree with you that kids seem to bring so much paper home from school, just piles up on the table until it basically falls off the table, and then it's then you've missed the deadline or whatever. So, but I also agree with Senator Stevens. If we can do more of this electronically, I think that would help. Okay, thank you for the testimony. Becky Judd with just says representing various community organizations. Becky, are you with us online? Okay. Well, we'll come back to Becky. Maybe she's on mute. June.
Hey, this is Becky Judd. I was on mute.
I thought so, Becky. Okay. Very good. You're live now. So go ahead and put your name.
Thank you for this opportunity. And I sent a letter to each of the education members already in support. But I would like to speak to my experience in working with the different youth organizations and some of the state agencies in the use of the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. When I work with youth organizations, often they are needing to look at, they have to plan their services and they have to evaluate their services. And those of you in the legislature that are helped to fund some of these programs, you need to know bottom line, are these programs effective? And the Youth Risk Behavior Survey has been one of the tools that has been used for evaluation. It's one of the tools that is required, or not tools, but the data is required from state agencies as well as national organizations in order to make the case of need. So when we start having more and more barriers to being able to get the data and get accurate data, it really puts our local community organizations in a bind. And I was one of the volunteers that Mr. Kurowski talked about several years ago, where I made calls every night for a week in calling up parents and asking them if they would return the permission form. And it was simply a call to remind them that there was a form there and that we would like to get it back. And what was interesting in those conversations, and it was minimal, it was just I wasn't asking them to say yes or no, just please return it. Many of them, and it was actually only a handful that said that had concerns. Most of them were all, oh, sure, we can do this. Oh, yeah, that's not a problem. And they wanted more information about the survey. They, as I said, there was only a handful out of what I must have called hundreds over that week that had a concern. And the other thing that was interesting to me about those calls and then the many conversations I've had with parents is that the parents that would have the most objections, often the ones that are so actively involved with their children's lives anyway, they are going to know what's going on in those kids' lives. They know what's going on in school. They know what's going on in school, and so they will follow up, and they'll be very attentive to this. So I believe that their rights will continue to be maintained through this through Senate Bill 8, and they will be actively pursuing what's happening in their children's lives. So I think that will be maintained. I think that's it, unless there's any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Becky, for your testimony. Don't see any questions right now. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay. June Sobosinski with United Way. Are you with us, June?
Good morning. Thank you, Senator morning. Meyer. My name is June Sobosinski once again, and I'm with United Way of Anchorage. My role there as Vice President of Community Action is to work with the community to, at the community level, achieve better results. And in order to do this, we certainly raise dollars, private dollars, to invest in programs using great evidence-based practices that are accountable for results, and we also attract public funding to do the same kind of work. And I kind of wanted to speak to that a little bit. I wanted to give you my opinion on sort of the risk. What's at risk if we didn't have valid, reliable data from various sources, but certainly the Youth Risk Behavior Survey gives us data that's incredibly useful to attract funding to this work. So I wanted to give you a few examples of that. For example, 5-6 years ago, United Way of Anchorage received a grant from the Substance Abuse Mental Health Administration, SAMHSA. And we are the grantee, but there's a robust community effort called the Anchorage Youth Development Coalition that does work with many partners to help increase youth resiliency and reduce substance use. If we didn't have good validated from the YRBS, we might not be in a position to get that kind of funding, and that's just one example. I could also point to Cook Inlet Tribal Council's strategic prevention framework, state incentive grant, SPFSIG, again from SAMHSA. Over 5 years, that's an $8 million grant to reduce substance use amongst Alaska Native American Indian populations in Anchorage. And we also have about $10 million coming through Division of Behavioral Health to also reduce substance use. You know, and the YRBS data is used, as I think Becky pointed out, to create a gauge on the need in order to attract these funds. Last point I'd make is that as a funder, United Way of Anchorage, you know, we distribute millions each year to the community here in Anchorage. And we direct that money to nonprofits that are accountable for results, but we do that in the context of community plans with specific community goals and indicators to track progress. One of our plans around the whole youth community is to get better results for our youth, and we want to see substance use go down. Well, guess what the indicator for that is? It's from the YRBS, and we use two of those, current alcohol use and binge drinking. And, you know, I think for a variety of reasons, including this intentional investment, you know, organizations like AYDC, many efforts in the community, the voices that you hear from Becky Judd and Michael Karaski and Carl Rose, for many, many reasons, including this intentional investment, we're seeing success. You know, we're spotlighting it, we're targeting investment. So from 2005 to 2009, we've seen current alcohol use amongst teens in Anchorage go down by 6 percentage points. And we've seen binge drinking reduced by 5 percentage points, from 28% to 23%, again, from 2005 to 2009. This is the data that the YRBS can give us to become more accountable in how we use our resources. So I just wanted to, you know, kind of give it that angle so you see what's at risk. And this bill is important to enable us to get that valid, reliable data. We support at United Way of Anchorage. We support moving this bill forward.
Okay, June, thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions for June? Okay, seeing and hearing none, thank you so much for joining us today. Was there anybody else online to schedule? Anybody else here in Juneau? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public testimony on Senate Bill 8. What I found, I don't know if everybody has a copy of the survey itself. It does ask a question about the seatbelt, Senator Stevens.
It was a personal conversation with Carl Rose.
And what I've found, and then in our packet too, it actually has some of the results from some of the surveys. And, you know, I'm happy to see that the kids using tobacco has gone down substantially. And I know personally I've had legislation trying to prevent kids from starting to smoke, because obviously if they don't start by the legal age of 19, there's a 90% chance they'll never start, which is good. Also, I know I've had personal legislation dealing with kids and alcohol, and I guess there's really no way for us to know if our bills or laws are effective unless you have some way of surveying. So this information is also helpful not only to the school district and the various nonprofits, but to us as well as lawmakers. I guess I would like maybe on Monday then to discuss the survey itself a little bit. There are some questions here that I think some people may find not necessary. I guess it's all a matter of perspective, like how many times have you eaten carrots in the last 7 days? You know, I don't know myself personally, and I suppose there's a good reason for knowing that. Carrots are good for you, but or another question here, question 79, in the last 7 days, how many times have you had vegetables? So, again, I guess these are all relevant questions and necessary, but I would like to talk about the survey itself a little bit. I do see the importance of it, though, and I do like how you've written the bill, Senator Davis, given the kids themselves the option to not participate if they don't want to, and certainly, as we heard, parents themselves who feel strongly about this will be tracking it and will ask that their child be excused. So I think the bill is written,
Mr. Chairman,
in a way to protect both the child and the parent. Yes, Senator Davis.
Before I know we're running out of time, but before we close, I'd like to make a couple closing
remarks. Sure. Yeah, please
remarks.
Go ahead.
First of all, I want to say that this bill has been around for a while. And just last year, I was able to get this bill through the Senate and through the House, and it died in finance a few days before the closing of the session. And so here I am back again. Why am I back again? Because I see the importance of changing the law that we have now. The statute that's in the book is not effective. I believe that what I have here is better. I know there might be some concerns about the questions that's asked. This bill has nothing to do with that. That's done by CDC. Any information that you want to get to them and question why they have particular questions on here, that information needs to go to them. But it should not hold this bill up, because we're only dealing with what's in this bill and what's going to be more effective. And what that survey does, it gathered the data so that it can be used, but they don't do anything else with that. They send it on to Atlanta or wherever it's supposed to go, and they distribute that information to the various organizations and groups that need it. And I want to say, lastly, this is not to demean parents or take away their effectiveness on how they deal with their children. I am a parent. I am a grandparent. I am a social worker, retired nurse. I've been there, done that. I believe that this bill would make us have more effective law to get the information we need. And even if we don't agree with the questions that's in there, I would encourage you to pass this bill on so that we can get a new law in place. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Davis. And we are out of time. So what we'll do is, and I know Senator Thomas had some comments he wanted to make as well on Senate Bill 8, but I do believe he's supportive of the bill, so I don't think that's going to hold it up, Senator Davis. So let's finish up on Senate Bill 8 on Monday. If we get a chance, we'll start Senate Bill 6, which is the pre-kindergarten school programs, which I think is Senator French and Senator Davis's bill. And then also, I believe the last half for the regents are going to be speaking. Oh, chancellors. Okay. Mm-hmm. The university chancellors will be speaking to us. Is that a joint or is that just here? Okay. So half the meeting will be with the chancellors. The other half will be taking up Senate Bill 8 and starting Senate Bill 6. So if there's nothing else, come before the committee. Have a good weekend. We're adjourned.